The last pomegranate wept from the desolate tree. Its once brilliant reds had turned to black, and brittle twigs twisted through the papery foliage. But the awaited tears evaporated before reaching the ground. The terrain longed for any moisture to touch its soil, and yearned for life to re-enter, to sprout the dormant seeds waiting within. Cloudless skies of relentless blue hung like an arid desert above the dying fields. Furrows of rock and pebble and wisps of dust wound through the infertile terrain. The world was devoid of optimism, with nothing left to propagate the soil. Naught remained to replenish the inhabitants. No expectation, no hope. Only a future filled with despair accosts each day.
Arid. An original story by M. L. Edson. Cal kicked the rock-hard lump of clay and cursed the farming heritage that consumed him, his family, his neighbors. Witnessing the demise of his own livelihood tore at his soul. His great-grandparents and their children and their children's children had diligently followed the same successful practices. Relying on themselves, their skills, equipment, and nature, they had captured and held the water needed to provide for themselves and thousands of others. And even before them, indigenous tribes had cultivated the valley's fertile fields and had harvested the bountiful fare and its wildlife for centuries. He glared into the greedy sky and only saw the cobalt blue that had hung sweltering above him for the last 5 months. Even the nights had been relentless in their ability to continue the scorching of the planet. The distant mountain range was only a stark silhouette with no remaining signs of last winter's light snowfall. All groundwater had been pumped, leaving the aquifers as arid as the soil above. Once an inland sea, this land had been remade into an inhospitable desert. An invasive and unforeseen intrusion, changing weather patterns, non-productive agricultural practices, and blind and selfish politicians sealed the land's fate. The state, the nation, and the world had once relied on the area for much of its food, bountiful crops of fruits and vegetables, dairy products, and beef cattle. Cal wrung his hands together, then swiped his brow out of habit. No sweat dampened his palm. Deep furrows on his face matched the empty irrigation ditches that had once flowed with sparkling, life-giving waters. The skeletons of his pomegranate and avocado orchards, planted by his grandfather and great-grandfather, lay on the ground, torn from the dry soil by the tractors that were now exiting his fields. The next orchard lay waiting for its own demise, a short distance down the road. Soon his children, his cousins, his neighbors would arrive with their chainsaws to cut the trunks and barren limbs into manageable pieces to be hauled away. The water retrieving factory would do its task, then send the remains to the energy producer, with only the promise of pennies for his previous wealth. Betsy, Cal's wife, had lost their last three babies, two before their birth, the third within hours. Their first two children, born 8 and 10 years ago, before the unrelenting drought, had miraculously survived and were now old enough to help with the farm, what little anyone could continue to do. Previous droughts had pushed his predecessors from the continent's central farming area to this, the western reaches of the land. There was nowhere else to go. The heavily salinized ocean lay only a few miles away, and ocean levels had dropped, leaving long stretches of sand filled with dying and decaying fish and rotting seaweed, none of the few remnants suitable for consumption. Cal pulled his straw hat lower onto his forehead, trying to ease the heat of the sweltering sun, and pulled the recycling tube from his pants pocket. He cringed with the anticipation of the bitter but life-giving water retrieved from his own body. "Damn, I remember when I spat out tastes like these. Now even spitting is a luxury." "And a crime," he thought as he sucked on the tube and wiped it off before shoving it back into his pocket. He pulled his shirt sleeve up to expose his wrist phone to the unrelenting sun. In moments, it was recharged. He tapped the picture of his wife and smiled for the first time today when her image appeared. "Are you almost done?" she asked. "I've got lunch ready to send out to you." "Yep. Trees are uprooted. Chainsaws should be here within the hour." "I'm so sorry." Betsy wiped at her eyes, dry and irritated. "I've got your coordinates. Your food should be there soon. I think you'll like what's in the bag. Another one of your culinary surprises?" Cal grinned. Always a treat. He could already hear the faint buzz of the drone heading his way. Thanks, hon. Remember your promise? Make sure you clip the best ones you can. Clippers right here. Cal held them up with his free hand so she could see them on her viewing screen. Already started. He turned his arm to point his phone at the ground so Betsy could see the small bundle of twigs he had taken from the center of the root masses, those with a small vestige of moisture still in them, maybe a trace of life still there. While his wrist phone was turned away from his face, he grimaced at the futility of the endeavor. I'll attach the twigs to the drone and send them back to you. Half are the palms and half are the avocados. The other guys down the road are clipping walnut, peach, pear, and others for storage. Betsy let out a telling sigh, and Cal knew of no response that would restore her once staunch attitude. His insides wrenched at the thought that no one would be left in another generation. It was impossible to shed a tear, and he knew she was sobbing inside. Cal had just finished eating his crunch lunch when his neighbors and family drove up in 6 pickup trucks. 20 people with 10 chainsaws began cutting the fallen rubble, clearing the fields, and stashing the pieces into the back of the pickup trucks. Cal waded through the jumble of sticks and logs to assist where he could. Well after dark, Cal finally opened the door of his farmhouse. Man, working 23 hours with only 6 hours for sleep can really drain your body, Cal said into the darkness. Food's in the restorer, ready for you, Betsy called out from the couch, her dim reading light illuminating the words in tandem with her eye movements, preserving as much energy as possible. Thanks, Bets. He pushed the bar at the bottom. The restorer hummed for a few seconds, then the door slid open, revealing his dinner. He downed it in 3 gulps, then walked to Betsy's side, sat next to her, and cuddled close. Kids asleep? Yes. You worked them hard. They've been down for quite a while. They did themselves proud today. He gave her cheek a gentle peck and looked over her shoulder. What are you reading? A message from Duncan. What's your brother up to? Any progress? Any reason for hope? She sighed again. He's as frustrated as the rest of us. He and his team have been working on ways to end the drought and devastation for so long. Her voice trailed off and she closed her eyes. Yes, but they'll find something soon, right? Cal said, trying to give his wife a glimmer of hope. He certainly hopes so. We're his only family left and I'm getting better, he finished for her. You'll see. Cal's memory flashed images of the two of them splashing in the streams and riding horseback through the lush orchards that were now gone. He tried to stifle his sigh so Betsy would not hear it. Betsy looked back at her glowing e-tablet and said, What Duncan and the others are doing is so secret. He can't tell me much. People all over the world are working on it. But only a few will share their information. The secrecy will kill us all. Soon, I'm afraid. Cal slowly shook his head. Well, give him my best and... I know. Don't tell him about the cuttings. If he knew we hoarded a few cups of water to keep them alive, he'd have to turn us in or lose his job, and all its perks. Perks? Ha! Some perks. Life in a laboratory? Wouldn't trade it for the open lands here, the open sky. Cal swung his arm wide, then laughed. His eyes widened in fear, and he looked at Betsy's e-tablet in her lap. A shadow covered his face. Betsy elbowed him in his ribs and grinned. Don't worry, Duncan's not online right now. He sent this message an hour ago. He can't hear us. Cal's tension left his shoulders, and he wrapped his arms around his wife. Time for bed, hun. He paused and looked into the storage cupboard high above the kitchen's prep area. We still have that stuff, right? Yes, but we don't have to use it yet. It'll make the end easier, faster, painless, when it's time. She felt a tear begin to form, but she wiped it away before Cal could notice it. But it's not time yet. Her thoughts raced to their 2 children sleeping peacefully in the next room. Nope, not time yet. He stood and reached for her to help her from the couch, but swooped her up and carried her up the stairs to their bedroom. Lying in bed, Cal's thoughts stormed through his head. Would Duncan find an antidote for the bacterium that had enveloped their world? Would it be soon enough to save his family? To save anyone? He looked at Betsy, finally sleeping soundly next to him. Damn. We might have to use that end-all fix-all stuff soon. Too soon, he whispered and bent over to give his wife a kiss. Now I know how the inhabitants of that other planet felt while their world was evaporating. How awfully nice of them to write their history and send it out of their galaxy so others would know what greatness had once been reached. The blue marble floating in space. How could those ignorant, naive humans have known it was their own bacterium that had caused Earth's own water to disintegrate? That one action, inadvertently including the bacterium in the message's container, would unintentionally destroy so many other worlds.
The last pomegranate wept from the desolate tree. Its once brilliant reds had turned to black, and brittle twigs twisted through the papery foliage. But the awaited tears evaporated before reaching the ground. The terrain longed for any moisture to touch its soil, and yearned for life to re-enter, to sprout the dormant seeds waiting within. Cloudless skies of relentless blue hung like an arid desert above the dying fields. Furrows of rock and pebble and wisps of dust wound through the infertile terrain. The world was devoid of optimism, with nothing left to propagate the soil. Naught remained to replenish the inhabitants. No expectation, no hope. Only a future filled with despair accosts each day.
This story originally was published in the anthology From a Writer's Finger to a Butterfly's Wing.